The name of this book is It's How You Handle It, Life's Journey by Oglivia Gibson, as told by Miss Eloise Purdy. And to find out that we family is like amazing. I would have never thought that, you know. We would have never known if Gliv, you didn't tell me about your mother writing this book.
We would have never known if she'd have never told me the story for me to tell you.
Right.
That is true.
Oh, boy.
What God does.
So, Ms. Purdy, you talk about sharing our stories, right? History truthfully revealed is the term that you use. So talk about that for a minute. Talk about sharing the history and why it's so important for us to know where we come from.
For me, it's so personal to want to know my beginnings and who had something to do with it and who was involved and where were you from? What part of the country or whatever? Because when I learned who I really am and where my mother came from, it was so interesting how it all evolved and how you meet your person that you're going to marry or whatever. It's just wonderful to learn that to me.
Right.
That's what you call history, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely what you call history. So talk about the Purdy family, the values of the Purdy family and what you took away from that as you created your own family.
I'm Murphy and I married a Purdy.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
That was the love of my life. Now, you want me to talk about the love of my life?
Please do. Please do.
I met J.C. Purdy, I think maybe before he was drafted. You know, the young black men were drafted back then.
Right.
And we corresponded while he was overseas. And then when he came back home, we got married.
Okay.
And my daughter, Oglivia, that's sitting here now, he brought her name back from overseas.
Mm.
And I asked him, I said, are you sure this wasn't one of your old girlfriends over there? I wouldn't have cared if it was. I said, you better not go back over there.
Right.
Yes. We had such a short life together.
Wow.
14 years.
Yes.
He was working under the car in the backyard. It fell on him, crushed his thorax, killed him instantly.
Oh, no.
And ended that marriage. And ended my life almost, too.
Wow.
Because I never married since.
And you were like 31 years old, if I remember reading that.
Yes, 31 years old.
Wow. So from 31 and now you're 90. You have.
I am 90 plus a few months.
Yes, ma'am.
4 or 5 months. All right. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And now, did I explain the question that you wanted to know?
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
So, Oglivia, I always thought your name was an unusual name. I didn't know where it came from, but I know it distinguished you. What does Oglivia mean?
I've given its meaning. It was one of the few things I had left from my father, and I was a daddy's girl. And I always penned the G in my name as God-given.
Mm.
So I felt that Oglivia, which most people in the South call me Olivia, and when he put the G in it, I thought it was God-given.
Wow. So there it is. I like that. It's a unique name, definitely.
I don't think I have heard of another Oglivia in the United States.
Right.
There may be one here.
Yes, ma'am. One of the things that you said in the book that you were angry that God had took your husband.
Well, I got mad at the wrong one.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
But God knew what he was doing. My husband had received an injury on the waterfront. That's because that's where he hurt his back. And he hurt day and night.
Mm.
And he would frown. And I said, why are you frowning? And he straightened up his face. I said, why are you straightening your face when I look at you? No need for me to make your day bad because I'm hurting. I said, when I'm hurting, I want everybody to know.
Right.
And that was the kind of man he was.
Yes.
And when he was killed, I never found another like him. And I remained single from 31 to 90.
Also, you said about your friends had started to shun you because you were a widow and they didn't want you to take their husbands away from them.
Oh, my Lord. I was 31 years old. That's fairly young back then.
Right.
But people were still courting. They did. They shunned me, and I knew they shunned me.
Mm.
And I took it. It's how you handle it.
Yeah.
Yes, I handled that real well. I was not interested in their husband.
Right, right.
My mother taught me better than that.
That's right.
You got that right.
So the morals back then, you know, they were so strong. The way, you know, we were raised, the way you were raised, your generation especially, very strict, a very strict moral code. Even when you talked about having children out of wedlock, there was a little shame associated with it.
Hush, hush.
You know, don't tell anybody, you know. And it's not like that today. What do you see now in today's current generation? I mean, they all over the place now in 2022.
They don't seem to mind what you know about them.
Mm.
And as if to say, that's my business.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had an abortion or something like that, was a disgrace. That's why her father drove that horse and buggy 50 miles to give her away. And
right.
I thank God for that.
Yes, ma'am.
Because I'm here.
And one of the things you said in your book, too, you said white women told your mother about black women and they didn't have to have babies like them because white women were getting abortions back then.
Yes. My mother was a friend of a rich white woman on the out on the big road, we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And she invited my mother over to visit her. Well, I guess that was just to get all the black news out of her.
Yeah.
And she would tell her private stuff because she lived with two brothers. And I don't know what went on between them. She aborted a lot of stuff. she told my mother, I'm not having a one I don't want.
Mm.
Mama said, I can't say that. Yeah. My mother was a Christian from 14 years old until she died.
Yes, ma'am.
Taught Sunday school till she went blind.
Wow.
Couldn't see the book.
Mm.
She loved God.
Yes, ma'am. How was it living during that period when we had the old rundown schools, the used books and the white children had everything and we didn't have anything?
And that's the way it's being wanted back.
Hmm.
It was for the black people, the whites had taught us. Well, when it first got to my brains, I was a young child because we used to go put in tobacco for white people.
Yeah.
And then when the child got about 7, 8, or 9, the mama would say, the white mama would say, come in the house. I mean, you can't keep playing with those black kids around the tobacco barn while we put in tobacco.
Mm.
So they taught young. Their mothers would separate them. And it was so obvious. Mm-hmm. We didn't stand out by the road together to get on buses.
Mm.
The white bus would come and they'd holler out the winner, nigger, nigger, nigger.
Wow.
We'd holler back at them. Cracker, cracker, cracker.
Yeah.
And
so,
we learned how to defend ourselves. And that's how it went.
So when you look at today's education, do you see any difference in the way things are now from where you were? I mean, you know, black children still lag so far behind in education, you know, in Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system is the most segregated school system in North Carolina.
The whites will find a way to keep the truth from you. If something is printed wrong about this race and how we get along and how we are treated, and you know, the difference between what our color causes us to get and what they get, they don't want you to learn about the truth.
Mm.
And they keep it from you.
Right. And that's why with that critical race theory, have you heard about that?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, they don't want us to know the truth.
That's what's going on. But we're going to find out the truth.
That's right.
We're going to find it out, and they might as well get used to that.
That's right.
I'm going to help all I can. I don't think God intends for that to last a whole lot longer.
What do you mean by that?
Some of the white people don't know. They know it is not right, and they don't want to take part in it.
Mm.
But they're going to be ostracized by the whites if they don't shut up.
What do you want the young people to know? What do you want our generation to know about this black-white relationship thing? I mean, I think that after all this time, I think black people still believe that some magical way that white people are going to change the way they feel about us.
Not unless we insist and make it and let them know we know the truth. Mm. The truth.
Yes.
We are going to have to prove to them we already know this.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you're hiding it for. Why don't you tell the truth?
So do you think people in a black America who have positions, they are afraid to challenge white people to let them know that they do know the truth because they'll lose their position?
Yes, they will get fired from the job. They want to hang on to their job and they keep quiet. They stood outside my door to see if I was going to tell that Eli Whitney did not invent that cotton gin. A black man did. And he claimed it.
Right.
Got credit for it. And they said if you did tell the truth.
If we told the truth, they would somehow, you lose your job and somehow they make you out of a big lie.
Mm. I want to hear some of the things that we don't know about that happened to your generation when y'all knew the truth and you were threatened.
The man that lived next door to my mother's people told some other black people where they could get more money picking cotton in Mr. So-and-so's field. And the Ku Klux Klan went in his house that night and cut his leg off.
Mm.
Right in front of his family. And he didn't bleed to death and die. And I asked him, Mama, why is he wearing that keg leg? She said, the Klan cut his leg off
and Uncle Bubba in the ditch.
And she had an adopted brother that they killed. He was sassy. He'd sass a white man in a minute. And they killed him and threw him in a ditch.
Mm.
And they found him in that ditch the next day. And they never knew who killed him. And just had buried him
and your grandfather, prostrate.
My grandfather, that's in the book that I wrote, that he went to a doctor because he had a prostate problem. And the doctor operated on him and broke the glass tube inside of his body.
Oh, no.
And sent him back home in a wagon 6 miles away. He bled to death. The horse stopped to eat food.
Nobody
and no crime, no questions, no nothing. That was a doctor.
Wow.
And family knew who the doctor was.
Yeah.
And you met the lady that knew those doctors, a white lady that knew those doctors.
Yes. And nothing was done.
So let me ask you this, Miss Murphy Purdy. We're talking about the book, is How You Handle It, Life's mm-hmm. Journey. And these commercials that you see on television with all these interracial couples, have you noticed that they're deliberately pitting white men with black women and vice versa? The interracial dating is just exploding, right? What would happen back in the day with a white man or a black man wanting to date a white woman?
Oh, he would be short-lived. He wouldn't have lived very long. If they went in a man's house and cut his leg off for picking cotton and telling people how to pick cotton where they got paid more money, he wouldn't live very long.
So what was it? What was the scenario with white men being with black women back in your time?
If he ordered her in the shed out the cotton field, she went in the shed and stayed until he said you could go, and went back out there and didn't say a word.
Hmm.
And everybody could either smell or they knew what she went in that shed.
Interracial babies occurred. Boom. Your sister.
My mother had an interracial sister.
Yes, ma'am.
They never talked about it. Never knew who it was. She looked white, but she married a black, very black man.
Yeah.
Uncle Bob.
Right.
Yes. Nothing was done. Nothing was said. Not even to her family about who it was.
Did you know that B.J. Murphy has a podcast called The 20-Minute Morning Show? Check out more than 200 episodes at 20minuteshow.com. It's the B.J. Murphy Radio Show.
I could tell what kind of woman you are because of my relationship with Oglivia. I know that you are an outstanding woman because you raised a great daughter. Tell me, what was your secret to raising your children right?
God. My mother made me get in front of her and go to church. We walked to church most Sundays, Sunday morning. Mother taught Sunday school. And we just enjoyed God's house on Sunday. Fear of God.
Yeah.
Love of God. Depending on God.
Mm.
Everything we grew back in the farm there was because God let it grow, made it grow, helped it grow.
Yes.
I think that's how I survived, knowing that if I live right here on earth, I'm going to heaven, and heaven lasts forever.
Come on now.
Do you know how long forever is? I don't. And I don't want to be left out in the flames not knowing God. It's not working.
Right. Tell me the importance of doing right for the sake of doing right. I mean, just living right. People don't think that you can just live right.
Well, if you live right, you don't have to keep looking behind you to see who caught you.
That's right.
A fear of somebody catching up with you doing wrong. If I go to somebody's gas station and pump gas and take off, I got to look back to see, you know, when they're going to catch me.
Yeah, right, right.
You are pleased and calm if you do right.
Mm.
And you know, I was taught God sees all.
Yes.
He knows you did wrong.
Mm.
You might not know I did you wrong, but God knows.
That's right.
And guilt. I think guilt can wear you down.
Yeah.
Mentally.
Let's talk about health. You being 90 years old, and in the book you talk about most of the food came from the garden. You know, back down in the country, everybody had a big garden. My grandmama had a big garden. We ate out of that thing when I used to spend the summer with them.
Yes.
And in Elizabethtown, and we ate out of that garden. And I don't know how many pots she had. I think she had like 3 pots. One had rice in it. And the other
college.
Yeah, one. Yeah. And yeah, she used the other 2. I don't know how she made all that food, but I think she only had like 3 or 4 pots, but we ate good down there out of that garden. And talk about that, how important it is to have a garden nowadays.
It is very important unless you are rich and have a lot of money to buy food, but you don't know. See, my dad and mom controlled the amount of fertilizer. You can put so much chemical into your vegetable, growing them fast and then making them pretty, that they'll almost make you sick.
Mm.
We knew how to grow vegetables that were healthy.
Right.
And
nobody knows that now.
You don't even know where your vegetables come from now.
Yeah, they sure don't.
And that was a good thing, that you knew how to control that chemical that things are growing with, so that you could remain healthy that way.
Now, this is what jumped out to me when I'm looking through the book. You said sugar has no nutritional value whatsoever.
None.
Right.
Whatsoever. It's just something
addicting.
That is so delicious to you that you just keep on eating too much of it. It's nothing. It does nothing good to the body. Sticks it up. And I guess God wants us to have to discern between good and evil.
Yeah.
Sugar's evil.
Mm. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it is. But it is good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is good. Yes, ma'am.
And things that are sinful are tempting and they're evil. Yes.
Just like sugar is.
Yes. Yes.
So how long have you stopped eating sugar?
You won't. It's too addicting.
Yeah.
Whatever addicting means, that you can't let it go.
Yeah.
Totally. Just give me a little piece, can you?
Right.
And then another little piece.
Yeah, BJ, yeah. I have to tell on her here because she likes her doctor that says, don't try to refrain totally from it. Give yourself some every now and then. So when I'm saying to her, mommy, maybe we ate too much sugar, she says, well, my doctor said it's okay to eat some.
Right, right. That's right. So Miss Murphy Purdy, you know, the pandemic, we lost a lot of loved ones. We lost a lot of people during this time. How have you been able to stay safe?
First of all, I rushed and got that shot when they found one.
Okay.
And the booster, because I figured my age was against me too. And that's how I kept going. Well, you know, you have to fight against evil. Sugar's evil. And eating properly, we know that sugar is not good.
Right.
For us.
Right.
But the pandemic seemed like they made it easier for us to buy sugar or whatever. they thought they'd get rid of a few more of us.
Mm-hmm.
And more of us did that.
Yes, ma'am. How do you keep your mind sharp? What do you do? Do you read a lot?
Yes.
A book a day.
No. Reading is educational and
entertaining.
I was told by my dad earlier, babe girl, I don't want you to have to work on this farm like I did. I want you to go to college. And I knew you couldn't get through college unless you kind of up and at it. So I tried to learn to study.
Yes.
And I got through Central in 4 years.
Wow. Okay. You did it.
I looked at my mother out there picking that, scrapping that cotton, and I said, oh, God, help me, Lord, pass this class.
Right.
Yes, they believed in education.
Yes, ma'am. You know, so many of our families left the farm because all of my family, they left Bladen County and they went to New Jersey, New York. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mine too.
Yes.
And when those factories played out, they didn't have anything to fall back on.
Yes.
Still working for whatever the labor number was.
Yes.
Because when I was young, teaching school was about the only professional thing you could do.
Beautician,
barbering, and school teaching.
Mm-hmm.
That you could get in a country or a county locally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Without going to New York and New Jersey.
Well, Miss Murphy Purdy, it has been a pleasure talking with you about your new book. You and Olivia put this beautiful book together as a document for the family. It's How You Handle It, Life's Journey. And I like to circle back and let's keep going deeper into some of the things that you would like to share with today's generation about how you grew up and give us some pearls of wisdom. And so we can document it and have it on tape for the world to hear, because you were dropping some stuff that we need these days. Let me ask you one question too. This is a good one right here. Why do you think our grandparents never talked to us about slavery? Even our parents, my mother and father, we never had discussions about slavery and what happened to us.
They didn't want to talk about something so miserable. That's the only reason, because nobody was going to whip them about it. But my mother-in-law said, we don't talk about that.
Mm.
But slavery was a scary thing for them. They could be killed and nobody would kill. They'd hang you up in your front yard and put your feet about 6 inches from the ground and let you kick, kick, kick. And try to scare the rest of the black people. And that did scare them.
Yeah.
To kicked and died in your own front yard hanging from a tree by your neck. They were afraid. And it was such a disgraceful, miserable way to die. That they couldn't stand to talk about it, I don't believe.
Yeah. And probably at that time, too, there's a book called 100 Years of Lynching that I know there's some stories in there about where I grew up in Wayne County. I know Bladen County had some lynchings. Did you ever hear of some of those things happening while you were growing up to some people that you knew in the community?
Recently, a cousin got hung in Bladenboro High School.
Yes, it happened in a little town that I lived near. I lived in Bladen County, Bladenboro.
Yes.
They hung him in the schoolyard recently. Recently. I mean, within the last, 10 years? Mm-hmm. 5 years, 10 years?
Yes.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
It's scary that you can get away with stuff like that now.
Yeah.
Can I share one incident recently?
Yes.
My cousins worked in the town, and they stated that there was a parade, and the Ku Klux Klan, they had no problem with stating they were having a Klan rally and a parade. And then one of my cousins recognized the shoes under the white costume of one of the Klan's members, and she said, "That's Robert's shoes. I know them anywhere."
Mm.
So you didn't know that he was a Klansman because he was a coward and wore that white covering. But by his shoes, the Lord let him be revealed.
Wow.
So she knew exactly who was under there. And those were the people you lived with every day that pretended they were something else and scripted such evil.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, It's How You Handle It, Life's Journey by Olivia Gibson, as told by Eloise Purdy. And Gliv, you wanted to make sure that your mother got a chance to tell this story in audio form. And tell me how important this was for you to give her a chance to do that.
It was a dream of hers, which became a dream of mine, which I feel was a part of a griot syndrome, wherever your family story is not being told and you don't know who you are and from whence you come. And all the trials and tribulations that they've had are only duplicated in my life. But if I don't know that my people have been a strong people, then I don't know how to persevere. So from even writing this story, perseverance of over a decade to help her get it out, I have learned that you just simply don't stop. And that's what perseverance is. And so you always are persevering if you never stop trying. So this was a part of being an educator, as my mother is, and then also for the benefit of my children and future generations, and have even shared it with many, many people now are saying, oh, I see. So the importance was to propagate a different way of seeing, to strengthen our people to thrive and to not be afraid, but go with God and persevere. Most of all, it's how you handle all of that, and it's all of life's journey. So it was very important for me to share it with everyone so that a lot of strong people come along beside me.
Absolutely. Is there another book in the works?
Well, I told Mom the next was going to be Aging Is Not for Sissies.
Wow. I like that. I like that. I like that. That's awesome. So Miss Murphy Purdy, thank you so much for sharing. And we're going to follow back up with another opportunity to hear some more stories from you. And I thank you for your book. It's a beautiful read. I really enjoyed it. And I'm going to read it from cover to cover to get more nuggets out of it. Again, before the interview, I was, going through some of the chapters and I found it fascinating. And then when I saw that picture, I was like, oh, my God. We are related to each other.
He's got to come to you. That was a surprise.
Yes.
She'd come to our reunion.
You know, when is it?
Labor Day.
I will be there.
And it's in
70th.
Whiteville. In Columbus County.
Okay.
Whiteville, near Whiteville.
Yeah.
But because we didn't want to have them in the North because nobody had money enough to travel and stuff. My dad had 16 siblings.
Wow.
Eight brothers and eight sisters.
Mm.
When my mother was adopted.
Yes.
She and her brother. Isn't that something?
Isn't that something?
And when they met, that was a difference.
Yes. Wow.
We would love to have you.
I would love to come because I was telling my wife, I said, you know what? I wish that I had a family reunion to go to because, you know, when all our relatives pass away.
We're taking you. We're claiming you.
Okay.
And
all right.
Your beautiful wife. Oh, my God.
Okay. We will be there.
The show is written and produced by BJ Murphy and executive producers Sabre Robinson and Alexandria Davis. From our studios in Charlotte, North Carolina, our contributors are Sean, Sunday, AK, and Brooklyn Alexander.